Sabbat still fumed at this news and stomped over to the fire, then stood by it, warming his hands and fixing a look of contempt upon my former slave. Ethelric and Harold were silent, apparently just as shocked and unsure what now to do. I knew I had to act quickly to take advantage of the moment, to make sure that Ethelric now made the right choice, so I moved forward to address the prince. So, Highness, if we retreat to the bridge as Sabbat suggests, Eir Forwick will hear of it, and the Eberarchi will rise up. Our line of retreat and supply will have gone. Do you dare risk that? Ethelric looked confused now. Sabbat was shaking his head, but had had no immediate argument to counter my own. Before he could say anything, Harold, sounding grim, spoke. It's worse than that, Highness. Ethelric groaned and slumped back in his chair and put his head in his hands, unhappy to be receiving so much bad news, but a moment later he looked up and nodded at Harold to go on. Well, Prince, the whole land from here to Eir Forwick was, not long ago, Welsh, either tribes of the Eberarchi or the Pennines. There are still many Welsh living here. If Eir Forwick falls, we could have an uprising on a huge scale. We could find 1,000 swords and spears marching up Dare Street and attacking us from behind at the bridge. That would be that, I think. He said this and then glanced round the room, eyebrows raised, challenging anyone to gainsay him. Even Sabbat pursed his lips at the thought and nodded reluctantly. Then the older lord's eyes narrowed and he raised a hand and pointed it at Aidan. All this supposes that this Welshman is not a spy. He refers to the Welsh in Eir Forwick as his people. Is that not a giveaway? I say he was planted here to sow discontent and create disunity. I say let us torture him to get the truth. At that I drew my sword and stood in front of Aidan. This man is pledged to me. I will not allow any harm to come to him, I said, glaring at Sabbat. Do not draw your sword in the prince's hall, Sabbat hissed. Harold put down his hand on my arm. Your argument is well made, Curdick. But put the blade down. I did, and bowed at Ethelric. Apologies, Highness, but the point remains. I will take an oath that this man does not lie. Ethelric looked even more confused, but eventually rallied to ask a question. If what he says is true, what must we do, Curdick? I pointed at the reeds that covered the hard-packed earth of the hall's floor. Stay here, right here. We hold a fortress, and we still have 500 men. Supplies are plentiful, and there are fresh water springs, as well as a well. We stay, and we hold, until my father comes with Ethelric. I looked at the lords around me. Some were nodding, and others looking anxiously at each other. The door to the hall opened at this moment, and Cuthbert came in, and talked to a guard, who glanced at me. I nodded at him to permit my friend to enter. Sabbat slapped his thigh in frustration. Supplies are not an issue. Numbers are. Even with 500 men, we will be hard-pressed to hold Owen out of here, even for a day. Unless your father comes tomorrow, all will be lost. Cuthbert arrived at my side and, bending over, whispered in my ear. I smiled and then winked at him. If only we had some idea if he was coming and how soon, the prince muttered to himself. Maybe we do, Highness. Cuthbert, repeat what you just told me. Cuthbert looked terrified of having to do that, and I could see his hand shaking. I, he stammered. It's okay, Cuth. Just do it. It's important. He took a deep breath. Highness, he said, there are fires to the north. All eyes now turned to him. A fire? Where? Not just one fire. I said fire, sire. Scores of them. It's an army out there. It cannot be anything else. Harold stepped forward. How far, boy? How far? Cuthbert screwed up his eyes, like he did when estimating a range for his bow. He nodded his head after a moment. Perhaps 10 miles, maybe more, but the low clouds reflect the glow. It has to be Ethelfrith, I said. It could be, Sabbat conceded, or your Welshman's word might already be true. It could be an uprising gathering to come here, rallying to Owen's call. Sire, we can't take the risk. We must leave now. Sire, I interrupted desperately, it is my father and Ethelfrith. Then we have to stay. It's our only hope. We must stay and occupy Owain's army long enough for Ethelfrith to come, and then together we can defeat him. Harold took less than a second to agree. I say stay, he said, slamming his tankard down on the table. Suddenly there was pandemonium, as all the lords began talking at once. Cuthbert took us all by surprise, not least me, by shouting at them to be quiet. They all stared at him in outrage. He spoke, and this time his voice was steady, determined, even noble. "It's like one of Lila's sagas. Remember when Urien was attacking Lindisfarne, and Firebrand stood on the causeway?" His eyes grew distant as he thought back several years. "Come no nearer, viper. I tire of retreat. I will die here, or I will prevail here." And his bondsmen struck spear on shield and roared their defiance. I was impressed. He had Lila's tone and voice down very well. Sabbat snorted. "This is not a tale, lad. This is real life. We are all going to die if we stay." But Sabbat had not noticed the prince. Ethelric knew his own limitations, how poor a leader and how clueless in battle he was. But he had been listening to Cuthbert and would know Lila's words well, for it's one of the bard's most popular sagas. Something in it inspired Ethelric. As he stared at Cuthbert, colour came back into his pale face. A king, or prince, or lord's main role and main task was to make decisions. This prince's decision this night would be critical to the outcome of this battle, to the survival of an Anglo-Saxon kingdom in the north, and possibly even to the future of the English race. He opened his mouth and made that decision. "We will stay," he said, "and we will fight, and pray to the gods that Ethelred comes in time." Sabbat's face was dark for a moment, but then he bowed. "So be it. It seems that all our fates depend on the eyesight of this man," he said. Then, still looking at Cuthbert, added, "In which case, may I suggest that your highness send this scout out to go and find Ethelred for us and bring him here?" "Eh?" mumbled Cuthbert, followed by a hasty, "my lord." Sabbat was grinning nastily now. "Your vision seems sharp. There is no doubting your agility and speed either. Ethelred must know we need aid quickly, so you can carry that news to him." "Yes, that seems fair," muttered the prince, back to his customary vagueness. "I suggest, Harold, you look to setting our defences, and then everyone get some sleep." I left the hall with Aidan and Cuthbert in tow, but as soon as I was outside, I span round and faced the Welshman. "Why did you not tell me about the uprising here Forwick before now?" Those dark eyes stared at me for a moment before he answered. "When I arrived in here Forwick, I had ideas I was returning to my own people." "Like you said just now," he nodded, then shrugged. "Yes, they are Eberarchi. We are Welsh, and I do speak their language, so I felt some bond there. When I heard them talking, I cannot deny I was excited. For an hour or two, when we left the city, my mind was full of dreams of a kingdom of Eberarchi reborn. Maybe even your people are slaves for a change." His eyes grew distant. Was he seeing images of my father toiling in the fields while he sat back and drank mead? If so, he was a fool, for my father worked as hard as anyone. "If that's the case, why speak now? Your words swayed the prince's decision. You must have known they would." "Well, I said I thought these things for an hour or two. Then I began realizing that I have more in common with you all." And at this he waved a hand towards me and Cuthbert. "Don't get me wrong, I am very proud to come from the race I do, and their past and history belongs to me. However, my present and future belongs with you. Do not forget also that One Eye is Welsh too, as are his people, and then look at the things he has done. In the end, a man is more than his people's past. It's his friends and companions, his family and his deeds today that matter." I nodded. They glanced across at Cuthbert, who I saw had not been listening. He was looking anxious, and I realised he was preoccupied with his mission out into the dark. "You'll be fine, Cuth. Sabbat might be an onery so-and-so, but he spotted that you are a natural hunter and a scout. No one will see you, and you will find my father, I'm sure of it." Cuthbert nodded, looking a little brighter. "Just don't take too long about it," Aidan grunted. Cuthbert and I found a dark cloak for him to wear, fresh arrows and arrow strings, food and drink. Then we went to the north-east corner of the fortress and climbed up to the palisade. We had one sentry up there keeping watch, and I asked him if he had seen any enemy activity. "No, my lord," he answered, and I dismissed him back to his duty. The slope beyond the palisade was acute, and the ditch at its base deep. Seeing that, I abandoned a brief idea that I had entertained of giving Cuthbert a horse. There was no way he could get it down there, and the main gate was blocked and too well watched by Owen's men to go out that way. In any event, he was a poor horseman at best, and far better on two legs. We removed one of the upright posts in the palisade, creating a narrow gap just wide enough for my friend to squeeze through. He poked his head out and looked around, and then turned back to me to say goodbye. I placed my hands on both his shoulders and looked at him. "Be careful, but be quick," I simply said. He nodded. "Be safe, Kurdik. I will be back." Then he quietly slid down the slope, climbed the far side, pulling himself up by the tree roots, and, with a last glance at me, was gone between the trees and out into the night. It was now about 2 or 3 in the morning, and it would be dawn in less than 5 hours. Returning to the fires, I saw that they had burnt low. The men had taken shelter in whatever hut or building they could, or else huddled near the fires wrapped up in their cloaks. Harold came past and waved me over to him. "Right then, the guard is set. Nothing more to do for a few hours. Let's both get some sleep. We'll be glad of it come the morrow." I nodded, and realised just how shattered I felt. I could not be bothered to find anywhere to sleep, so I rolled up in my cloak next to a fire and closed my eyes. In an instant, I was asleep. When Harold woke me, it was still dark, but a faint glow of light on the eastern horizon told me it would be day soon. We roused the men who, groaning, coughing and complaining, huddled around fires to warm themselves, splashed water at their faces, and then toasted some stale bread over the flames, or ate whatever else they could find. Edward stumbled over to me, eating what looked like bacon. I smiled to myself because he always managed to scavenge something to eat. He looked at me and his face wore an unusual anxious expression.
"Aidan told me you sent Cuth to go and find Ethelfrith."
I nodded.
"You think that was wise?"
"Can you think of anyone better?" I replied. He thought for a moment.
"Well, no, but still, it's Cuth."
"I know, and I'm worried too. But he'll be fine. It's us I would be more concerned about. Give me some of that bacon. I'm starving." My breakfast was interrupted, though, as horns now sounded from outside the gates. Our sentries on the walls waved towards us. Edward and I exchanged glances. Was there Ethelrith already? I scuttled up to the battlement, joined by Sabbat, Harold, and eventually a yawning, very sleepy Ethelric. I took in the view from the battlements for the first time in daylight. Owen's army had camped in scattered spots on the battlefield, avoiding the bodies of the fallen where they could. I saw that a few of the slain were piled up in heaps, whilst their weapons and shields had been collected and stacked together. But other than that, no attempt had yet been made to clear the field, and it looked truly appalling. Ravens and crows, as well as the occasional fox, were busy with their grisly habit of picking over the bodies of the fallen. What had been yesterday 1,000 fit young men was now just food and bloody offal for the animals. Occasionally, some of Owen's men would throw stones at them to clear them away, but they soon would be back. I tried not to think whether a bird would be picking morsels from my dead flesh later in the day. Owen's army, like ours, would have been exhausted and had just found spots away from the bodies, lit fires and slept. Now, a small deputation was approaching the gates. 20 or so warriors accompanied the lords and carried banners. Under them stood Owen and Samlin, other Welsh kings, and I saw, with a scowl, Hussa. He carried a banner as well, but was dragging it across the ground in apparent contempt. Anger rose in me as I realised which banner it was. It was the Wolf's Head banner, our company's. The deputation halted outside the gates and looked up at us. Owain, resplendent in his golden armour, stepped out to the front. Hussa moved forward with him. Owain shouted something in Welsh. Hussa then repeated it in English. So, Hussa was now moving in the circles of kings, acting as a translator.
"Who has authority to negotiate for you?" Hussa said.
"I do," Ethelric shouted back, his voice full of defiance and nobility. I had to admit that, although he was not much use for anything else, when we needed a speech-giving, he was your man. Hussa whispered something to Owen, who replied,
"Prince Ethelric of Deira?"
Ethelric turned to me and whispered, "Is that not the boy who bested you in that tournament? I gave him his sword, didn't I?" "Yes, Lord, it's Hussa."
"You know who I am, traitor?" Ethelric shouted down.
Owen continued talking, and Hussa translating.
"The lords of Regid, Elmet, Strathclyde, and Manor Gododding are here, and I speak for them. You are defeated. We claim this land for the kingdoms of the Pennines, and demand that you lay down your arms and prevent further loss of life."
Ethelric did not hesitate.
"Traitor, you tell your new masters that this fort and this land are ours, and we will fight to defend it.
Owen laughed and replied.
With what? Usser said. You have what, 400 or so men? We are 3 times your number. You will be slaughtered.
I offer you a chance, Ethelric said, ignoring Husser. Leave now, and we will let you depart with weapons and banners, and what spoils you have taken. I glanced at him sharply. Did that include Mildred? Owen laughed again, and he turned and said something to Samlin, who nodded. From behind him, his men dragged out 3 young women, all dressed in fine clothes and wearing my mother's jewels. The sunlight caught the amber, and it glowed. I almost cried out as I noticed that one of them was Mildred. She appeared to be unhurt, but was clearly terrified. She looked up and saw me on the battlements.
Kerrick! She shouted. Help me!
Samlin looked at me smugly and shouted in English.
Our friend has told us you were here. Is it spoils like these your letters take?
Pretty, aren't they? He added, stroking Mildred's face. She sighed away, shuddering at his touch.
Samlin, if you've harmed her, I shouted, unable to control myself.
No, not yet, not quite yet. I'm saving that pleasure, he emphasized the last word with a leer at his men, who laughed,
for tonight, when you are dead.
Then, my men are looking forward to it as well. I'm a good lord, and I share the spoils around.
Bastard, I shouted.
Owen now spoke again, and Husser repeated his words in a taunting voice.
So then, I think we can dispense with your offer and come to ours.
What is that? Ethelric asked.
Oh, I believe we can be just as generous. We will let you march away with all your weapons in full honour of war. As you can see, our army is scattered and not yet ready to fight you. You can safely go south to the bridge at Cattraeth. You will leave this land, and we will let you survive.
Husser stopped for a moment and checked he had some words right.
And King Owen will even allow you to take these spoils with you.
He waved at Mildred. Samlin scowled at that, and I was grimacing at the offer as well. Would they really let us go? Give us back Mildred, permit us to march away unharmed? But if they did, all we had feared would come to pass. Ere Forwick would rise up, we would get killed at the bridge. We would not be here when my father arrived. When my father arrived, of course, that was what it was all about.
Reject the offer, I whispered to Ethelric.
What are you saying, lad? He will let us go, and you will get your sister back. Don't you love her?
Sabbat asked severely. I don't think he will keep his word. It's just a trick to make us leave this place and get out into the open. I now looked at the scattered camps of Welsh and quickly counted numbers. I could see perhaps 500 men. That meant 1,000 were out of sight, somewhere. My eyes fell onto the edge of the battlefield, where the land dipped away to the southern slope, the same slope where we had hidden, out of sight of the Welsh, only the day before. I'm sure of it. They had the bulk of their men ready to ambush us. Behind me, Grettir had been standing, keeping silent, but now the veteran spoke.
Master Kerrick is correct. I count no more than 400 men out there.
Why? What is he doing?
Sabbat asked. I knew, or thought I did.
Ethelfrith, Owen knows he is coming, and wants us dead quickly, so he can defeat him in turn. Then nothing can stop him.
Very well, then, Ethelric said, lifting his voice and shouting down to Owen and his lords.
I must reject your offer. We will not surrender, Viper. We die here or prevail here.
I smiled and wished Cuthbert had been around to hear that. I glanced at Harold and he winked at me.
You'll have to tell your friend, he whispered. Then his face looked serious again. We first had to survive the day, of course.
Very well, Husser shouted out Owen's reply. You have sealed your fate. No prisoners will be taken this day.
Now Owen's horns sounded again, but with a different tone. Suddenly, we saw their missing 1,000 men. They came over the rise, just as we had done the previous noon, darkening the southern sky with their numbers, and marched in formation towards us. The men around the campfires quickly assembled, and I saw that most already had weapons at hand. They were already prepared and well organized, and I knew that I had been right. Owen had heard about Ethelfrith, and was determined to finish us, and then turn and destroy him. Harold yelled an order, and our own horn sounded, and suddenly our men were arming and assembling on the battlements. I glanced northwards over the far palisade as I tried, and hoped to see an army coming. But there was nothing moving out there. Turning away and slapping my own helmet on, I drew my sword and prepared for battle. Towards us 1,500 men marched, and far away, Loki laughed and rolled his dice. Chapter 16. Ethelfrith. A man has 5 senses, and each and every one of them gets used in a battle. That morning, of the second day of the Battle of Cattraeth, my senses were overwhelmed. You see, with a terrifying clarity, the approaching army. Perceive the fear mingled equally with hate in the eyes of the enemy, as well as the terrified pleading expressions of those you have struck down. You feel your heart pounding, and later the terrible crush of battle, the indescribable sensations of your blade cutting flesh and bone, the searing pain of injury, and the burning of air in your lungs. You taste blood and smell, God's the smell, you smell shit and piss and smoke of burning buildings. Above and beyond all of these, however, it is the sense of hearing and sound that you hear, which, for me, at least, you'll recall when you think of battles you have been in. That morning, it was the horns and drums of Owen's army echoing up at us in daunting clamour, which I hear in my nightmares, and that wake me even today in sweat-soaked terror. Then I hear the crashing of spears on shields, and the taunting war cries which the enemy shouted at us. Finally came the voice of Owain, Samlin, and a score of other kings, princes, and lords, calling them forward. And forward they came. There was urgency in that charge, and a kind of heroic recklessness, that confirmed to me that Owain was keen that this business with us be done, and be done quickly, so that he could then turn to the real task of this day. Almost all of the 1,500 men charged at once. There was no reserve apart from 100 or so Gododdin cavalry. There was no formation save one large mass. There was little strategy except one. Get inside Stanwick camp and kill us all, and as soon as they could. We had but a few archers and slingers left, maybe 50, but these pelted the enemy with arrow and stone that brought some screams, as perhaps a dozen men caught a missile in some unprotected part and fell beneath the feet of their countrymen to be crushed. However, little that we did disrupted their shield wall or diminished their numbers, and on they still came. "Throw anything you can at them!" Harold bellowed. Grettir and Edward took a dozen men and returned with stones and bricks, burnt logs, axes, and even the remains of a roasted boar. Other companies did the same, and brought back anything that might make a missile. All of this went over the wall. Not enough, though, nowhere near enough. The Welsh army had reached the outer ditch. Some of them, led by Owain, were lucky, and had come up against the gate where there was no ditch. They threw themselves against it, trying by brute force to smash their way in. Glancing that way, to my left, I saw that Harold's men were on my side of the gate, and Savart's company, beyond it. Harold had the remnants of the Stanwick garrison in reserve behind the gate. I turned to look to my front again across the southern ditch at the enemy army. Most of the army had to traverse the 10-foot-deep ditch which ran around the camp at the foot of the palisade. A few hours before, the agile Cuthbert had passed across this same ditch carefully and slowly by himself, but this army just fell down into it. A good number fell too fast and too far, and smashed ankles or landed on elbow joints which snapped on the impact. Their peril was made worse when dozens more of their comrades tumbled down upon them, crushing them, and then still more fell upon these men. Soon the ditch was full of a writhing mass of warriors, trying to make headway across the bloody debris below them. Others, though, too many others, slid down the outer ditch wall, or holding on to spear shafts held by their fellow warriors, dropped down more carefully, and were then better placed to come across to the near side of the ditch. There we pelted them with stones and rubble. I heaved up a large blackened stone, retrieved from the nearby campfire, and tossed it downwards. As I did, one youth, no older than me, looked straight at me, and saw too late the stone coming for him. It smashed into his face, and he fell back dead. A moment later, a sling stone fired from the far side of the ditch ricocheted off my helmet, and I tumbled backwards myself, my head now spinning. I felt strong arms heave me up, and as my sight returned, saw the anxious face of Grettir staring at me. His lips were moving, and for a moment the ringing in my ears prevented me from hearing his words. I remember thinking that the terrible din of the battle was gone, and maybe that I was dying. Then, with a rapidity that made me dizzy, the noise was back, and I could hear the old retainer speaking. "You hear me, master? Can you see me? It's Grettir." I nodded and put my hand on my head, then took it away and inspected it. I had expected to see blood, but my helmet had saved me. I looked around for it and saw that Grettir was holding it out to me. "I'm fine, Grettir, just a bit stunned," I said, climbing to my feet unsteadily and shaking my head to clear it. Grettir nodded and handed me the helmet before stepping back into the line at the wall. I stood for a moment to regain my senses and looked at the battle below. Owain was leading repeated charges at the gate, but as yet the sturdy oak structure was holding, and Sabbat's men from one side and Harold from the other were causing great injury to any Welshman that approached. Beyond the gate still more, as Sabbat's men were pelting the right wing of the Welsh as they tried to climb the wall there. In front of us, the enemy had reached the ditch below our section of the palisade and were trying to clamber up it. Edward was yelling foul abuse as the warriors beneath him, and standing beside him, Aidan seemed to be repeating his words in Welsh. Below I could hear furious replies, and I smiled for a moment at some of Edward's juicier words and wondered how well they translated. Then I stepped forward next to Edward and looked down. My smile dropped. Immediately underneath us, scores of the enemy had come up to only a few feet below the palisade. We kept on throwing what we could at them, but our supplies of effective missiles had all but run out, and unhindered now, the enemy were climbing up each other or using knives thrust into the packed earth as handholds to pull themselves up. So, at last, when 50 or so had reached the palisades, one of their chieftains gave a loud bellow and they made a surge at it. The top of a head popped up over the palisade, and I cracked it open like a nut with my sword, and the warrior fell back down. To my side, Edward gave a roar and, using an axe he had found, was hacking mercilessly left and right. Dozens died as they tried to come over the top, but still more came, and suddenly, with a cry, the lad next to me was impaled on a spear and fell screaming down into the camp behind. A pair of huge warriors leapt over the wall, and in an instant the enemy were amongst us. One of them, with a ragged black beard, still had his shield and rammed it into my stomach so that I doubled over in agony. Edward stepped back and cut at him, slicing his shoulder open, but in doing so left the wall for a moment, and so another pair of Welshmen were over it in a flash. I scrambled to my feet, protecting myself with my shield, and swung wildly left and right. Edward was doing the same, and I now saw that Aidan had also been forced back from the wall. All three of us were teetering on the inside edge of the fighting platform that ran around the camp, with no place to go backwards except a sharp fall onto the hard-packed earth below, where a number of our men were already lying groaning or dead. Grettir was at the other side of the pair of warriors who had come over first, and he shouted something at them, and as the nearest one turned, hacked at his neck. The man fell to his knees, blood gushing from an artery. Then his eyes rolled upwards and he lay still. That left the one with the black beard, who Edward had injured, and as he turned to cut at Grettir, I slashed at his legs and cut them from under him. Grettir stepped forward and finished him with a stab to the throat. Beyond Grettir, the Welsh had not managed to reach the wall, but to my right I saw that we were losing the battle. On the far side of Aidan, 50 enemy warriors were now massing on the battlements, and had killed our men there or pushed them over the edge. Now they had an opening, and none of our army stood the other side of them. All they needed to do was push along the battlements, down the steps, and they could come behind us wherever they wished, or, more likely, fall upon the men at the gate and open it. More Welsh were poised to come up and over the wall. We had to ask fast. "Shield wall, Wixton Company! Shield wall!" I shouted, and locked shields with Grettir and Edward. "Form a column, three wide! Shields locked!" I ordered, and hesitating, the men started to turn towards me. "Quickly, men!" Grettir backed me up, and soon the men were shuffling into a long column, facing along the battlements towards us, three men wide and with shields locked behind each other. "Now!" I shouted at Edward and Grettir, and we pushed forward as a few more Welshmen came over the wall. Surprised by us, they were unbalanced and fell back screaming into the ditch behind, taking two more with them. "Turn!" I shouted, and we wheeled around to the right. The rest of the company came up behind us, and now we are a long column of steel and iron, a battering ram with one purpose, to clear the battlements. We pushed along the battlements up to the first Welshman, who now turned to face us. They were not formed up, however, and we were as we cut, hacked and pushed, and they fell to our blades and spears. We stepped forward, and I had Grettir angle his shield left to protect us from men trying to come over the wall, or from missile fire from beyond the ditch, whilst Edward and I kept ours facing along the wall. Gradually, though, the enemy realised the danger, and a huge brute of a warrior chieftain dragged and kicked his men into line, and with a rattling and banging of wood on wood, they dragged their shields together and formed a similar formation. Now it was down to brute force, our will against their will. They were desperate to finish us fast and to be ready for their next battle. We were desperate to hold on for just another hour or so. When it comes to brute force and a trial of strength, there are few men stronger than Edward. I had no idea how long that struggle lasted, but it seemed like an age. Muscles ached and sinews popped under the effort. Knives, spears and blades stabbed back and forth over the shields. Gradually, as men fell on both sides, we edged along, inch by inch and yard by yard, until I felt I could stand the effort no longer. Then, with a shocking suddenness, the shield wall ahead of us just gave way. The enemy started to pull back, then a few started to run, and in an instant the 60 or so of them were hurtling away from us along the battlements. We advanced and cut several more down, and then there were no more left. I shouted in triumph. But then the cry caught in my throat, and I saw that the danger was not yet over.